Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello, Hank. How are you today?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm in a dreamlike state.
Oh, nice.
In honor of our program today. Do you recall your dreams often?
Very rarely, but when I do, they usually crack me up. I don't have nightmares. Well, I'm sure I do have nightmares, but most of them that I wake up, I kind of giggle at them.
That's a great way to express yourself then. Get all the joy from your experiences yeah. while you're sleeping and wake up feeling happy and refreshed. That's good. Well, hopefully you'll hang around a bit today because we are going to have a conversation with my guest, Laura Grace, about dreams and our dream lives and how we can utilize dreams for our mental health and well-being, which is our ongoing quest every Tuesday at 2 to come together and talk about those things in our life that most profoundly affect our mental health and well-being and our relationships with others. So thank you for tuning in today and being a part of the show. And before we get started, I just want to mention that next week we also have another special show about grief and all the ways that we grieve in our lives beyond just the loss of a loved one physically, but the losses that we experience throughout our lives when it comes to jobs or relationships or experiences. So I hope you'll make a date to tune in with us next week. My guest is flying out from Denver just to talk about The Alchemy of Grief, her book. And I also want to take a moment to say thank you to Tim Jouet, San Luis Obispo, because I was out riding my bike last week and I was in Avila Beach on my cruiser and I was riding home and I got a flat tire. And so I found myself walking the Bob Jones Trail with my big blue cruiser and thinking, wow, it's going to be a many hour walk back to Rio Grande. And as I turn the corner to head past Avila, this nice young man pulls up on his bike with a surfboard on the side. And he said, are you walking by choice? And I said, no, absolutely not. And he stopped and spent about a half hour patching my tire and getting me on my way. And I was able to ride home. And it's just those kind of experiences that make life here such a wonderful thing that people take the time and have the time to slow down and connect with others. And so thank you, Tim. But also thank you for reminding me to remind all of you that it's those moments of connection with other human beings that really add a richness to our life, that really make being here worthwhile, and that we can get so busy and so caught up in driving quickly places or feeling like we have a deadline that we don't take the time to stop and recognize those other beings that are sharing the journey with us. And I noticed I kept saying to Tim, gosh, I hope this isn't messing up your day, taking this time out. And he was so relaxed. And he said, you know, I have nothing else on my schedule today. I was just going to go out and enjoy the beach and catch some waves. I thought, wow, this is a healthy attitude to have. So that was many lessons, Tim, and I thank you for that. And as far as today's show, you know, it's an interesting topic, dreams, on many levels. One, because they're mysterious and often baffling and sometimes wonderful or make you laugh, or they can also make you feel disturbed or terrified. But it's a conversation, or it's a subject that is also multifaceted because it's such a wide-ranging topic, and there's so many different schools of thought that quite often it's hard to rein in it enough to have a real conversation. The other part is that when you talk to other people, there's rarely anything more boring than exchanging dreams with each other, right? Having that conversation about, I got to tell you what I dreamt last night. And as much as you want to stay engaged and hear about the dream, it's really hard to think that anyone else's dreams are as exciting or as interesting as they actually think they are. But if you're someone who pays attention to your dream, it can really be a lonely practice because it's something you can't really talk about easily with other people if they're not also invested in wanting to explore their dream life. They might roll their eyes or think that you're crazy or that you're, caught up in kind of the wooey of the world. And so for those who really take the time to build a practice around noticing dreams or recognizing dreams or working with dreams, it's a really powerful experience, but I would imagine can be kind of lonely. So having said that, I think it's a topic that we need to discuss because I think dreams make me actually a little anxious. I know that when I have ones that seem a little prophetic or sending me a message, I tend to get more nervous and excited. And then, like everyone else, I'm always curious to know what certain images mean. So we're going to try to tackle it today with my guest, Laura Grace.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much for coming in. And for those of you who might not be familiar with Laura Grace, she is a lecturer, an author, a teacher, and the director of the Circle of Grace. And she also produces the annual Central Coast Women's Symposium that was about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, March 14th.
March 14th. I had the pleasure of meeting Rhian Eisler at that time. So Laura was responsible for bringing her to town and the wonderful guests the last 5 years. Laura Grace also has a background in conscious relationships, women's spirituality, Jungian dream analysis, and integrative studies. She's taught over 150 programs on both waking and nighttime dreams and published more than 200 articles on dreams, including archetypes, the psyche, and unconscious. Laura Grace has facilitated dream groups since 1994 and lectured on dreams throughout the United States. Her dream process examines the depth of dreams, the power they possess, the distinct language of dreams, and guides learners to put their nighttime dreams to work in fulfilling their soul's blueprint. Mm-hmm. That's a very impressive background when it comes to the world of dreams, Laura. So why don't we start by telling us a little bit about how you got interested in dreams yourself.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Elizabeth. Actually, this started for me when I was quite young. Around 16 years old, I was having precognitive dreams. And so just quickly, what that means is it was a dream that was foretelling what was going to happen the next day, not like way out in the future, but the next day. And so I'm telling my mother about this, and I'm in high school, I'm in 10th grade, and I'm going to school, and I'm saying, you know, I dreamt about what happened today. I dreamt about that last night. So she encouraged me. She was a very intuitive woman who also was quite a prolific dreamer, who said, why don't you just start writing these down? Because I think they're a gift for you. So that started around 16, and then I did that off and on through my 20s. And then really around 25, 26, delved into my dreams with both feet, really wanting to understand them. So it's been a pathway for me spiritually, emotionally, psychologically, for many years, for over 20 years.
And yeah. So what was it that you found was the benefit of tuning into your dreams?
Well, they were like a barometer, like a compass, showing me, if I would pay attention to them, really which way to go. When I would follow my dreams and look for the guidance and trust in it, things went fairly well. You know, there's always bumps in the road. But when I didn't follow them, like not following my intuition, it could turn into something much more messy, sticky. And I would look back and say, yeah, but my dreams were trying to tell me that. Because when you write down your dreams, you'll see themes begin, patterns will begin to emerge. Mm-hmm. And they're very personal. So when we follow our dreams, they help us physically, emotionally, spiritually. They help us psychologically. They help us in our relationships. They help us with career, with finances. I mean, it covers the whole nine yards of our life.
So in a way, dreams might be our own personal psychics.
Exactly.
Built-in psychics.
Exactly.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you can be part of this conversation by calling 805-781-3875. If you're curious about the world of dreams or how this process works, you can also be part of the conversation by joining us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And also, previous shows are available at kcbx.org on our wonderful active website. And if you're also interested, as you're listening today and you want to find out more about how dreams work or to work with your dreams in a more personal way, Laura Grace is doing a course through Cal Poly Extended Education, right, that's beginning May 14th.
Yes.
The course is called In Your Dreams, and it'll be 4 Thursdays. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. But so where should we start with this? What is it that most people want to ask you when it comes to dreams?
Well, they want me to interpret their dream, which is very tricky because unless I really know someone or have been working with them, maybe one-on-one or in a group setting, it's hard for me to know. Because like if you have a dream tonight about this radio show, mm-hmm. it's going to mean something very different to you than if I have a dream about today's interview, because this is your life's work. So it helps to know the person, or at least have a feel for what really matters to them when you're working with dreams. Mm-hmm. And I don't like to do what I call McDream sessions.
What is that?
Well, it's like McDonald's, like fast food approach to interpreting a dream. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll give it a shot, but I really hesitate. I'm very reluctant mm-hmm. because I don't think it really services the person and what's going on with their psyche. You know, but, and the other thing with dreams is that we don't realize, they might be boring to some people, but we don't realize how much we're exposing our deepest truth, our deepest selves, when we share a dream.
So those funny dreams that we might be sharing with someone, I dreamt my dog talked to me last night. They really could be saying more about us than we want other people to know.
Well, they're probably saying much more than what we're aware of unless we've been working with our dreams. And somebody who understands dreams will see a deeper truth of what's going on. So, yes. Yes, there's more going on than just the dog talking to you. You know, the dog, because you're the dreamer, so you've actually written the dream, you've written the screenplay, you've directed the dream, you've produced the dream. I mean, you're really running the show, and that dog is an aspect of you for the most part, not always, but most often some part of you coming through. So it's very revealing when we start sharing our dreams. They're telling a lot about us on a personal level.
So are there common themes, though? You know, people talk about having flying dreams, mm-hmm. or dreams that their teeth fall out. I'm trying to think of those kind of common mm-hmm. themed dreams, yeah. or death dreams, right, are the ones that people are most afraid to talk about. Are there some images that are kind of universal in dream work or...
Yeah, there are, and that are archetypal. So we're talking about different images that we can relate to no matter where we might live in the world, no matter what our experience is. But a death dream is very common. In fact, you mentioned having this person on next about working with grief, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of grief that can be processed during dream time that a dreamer can't work through when he or she is awake. So dreams could be very powerful if you've lost somebody. I've had a dream of my father about a year ago. It was a reassurance dream. He died back in 2003 and came into dream time, and it was the most comforting, incredible feeling of love that I've ever experienced during dream time. So those are very powerful. But yes, flying dreams are usually have a lot to do with libido. Oh. And energy, yeah, and inner passion and power and excitement and creativity. And then the falling out, the teeth falling out, that usually has to do with what we've said maybe the day before. Maybe we were gossiping or maybe we were talking negatively about somebody. That's a common dream. Taking a test is mm-hmm. probably the number one common dream theme that I've encountered with people.
And is it the forgetting to show up for the test? Or
all of it, yeah. It's not ready for the exam, can't find the room, can't get to our locker, you know, all of that. And usually it's just something that we're not feeling prepared at that we're going through at this point in our lives. Maybe some challenge that we're facing that we may be prepared for, but our unconscious say, no, you're not quite there yet.
Right, the anxiety, the anticipatory anxiety.
Exactly.
All right, well, what about the being naked places?
Well, those are interesting dreams because that really has a lot to do with how you're feeling during the dream. It depends on which part of the body is naked. Is it your upper body exposed, your lower body? How are you feeling? Are there people in the dream that you know? Or are they strangers? Are you in an indoor, outdoor place? But mainly when we get to those kinds of dreams, there's something that we might not be ready to expose about ourselves mm-hmm. that we want to keep private. But it's becoming more public, and so we might be conflicted. But if you're really happy and you're out and about and you're nude and you're in a great space, you're probably really okay with this, what's ever being exposed about you. You're okay with it.
And so I guess because I started the show saying that there are so many ways to explore dreams, can you talk a little bit about your focus or what is the orientation in dream exploration that you come from?
Yeah, thank you for asking that because there are so many different ways in which we can approach dreams. When I'm teaching a class like at Cal Poly coming up, I'm covering the surface. In 4 weeks, you can't really go too deep. So we'd be talking about dream recall. And it's a Jungian approach, okay. Understanding the language of our dreams, understanding the characters in our dreams and so forth. But when I'm teaching something that is more private, like a private class, or when I'm working with clients one-on-one, I take a more embodied dream approach. So embodied, what I'm talking about is I'm working with the dreamer, the dream images, and the body. So somatically speaking, we might be looking at how the dream images are being felt, the sensations in the body.
While we're dreaming or when we wake up the next day, at what point are we noticing the feelings?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, both. Like, for example, I had a dream back in February. I was going through a stressful time at school at Pacifica and getting ready for the women's symposium, and I had a dream that a snake bit me on the top of my left hand. Well, those fangs went in, and during dream time, it was very painful.
So you could actually feel it.
Oh, totally. And I thought it was venom, but it ended up being medicine, and it actually gave me energy. But I could feel those fangs in the top of my hand for about 2 weeks after that dream. I could still go there. So the images are alive, and they're living in the body. And so, like Marion Woodman, are you familiar with Marion Woodman's mm-hmm. work and James Hillman? They help us understand how we can bring dream images into the body and experience an awakening or a healing around certain issues or maybe a physical issue that we're going through.
So you're talking about dream work and the embodiment, working how the physical body experiences those images. And can you talk a little bit about what are other you know, to give some comparison, what are other ways that people look at dream work that are different?
Yeah, well, there's a dream process that I've been learning about for about the past 4 years called Dream Tending, which was created by Dr. Steven Eisenstadt, which you know is a co-founder of Pacifica Graduate Institute. And that takes a very different, more abstract approach. It's a one-on-one experience where you go back into dream time in the person you're working with is leading you there, and going back into the landscape and reliving that whole experience around the landscape, the images that are coming up, the characters that are showing up. And then through that process, you actually trace it back to something in childhood that has to do with that dream that you're having now as an adult. So there's usually some kind of psychological component, a healing that takes place through that process. And that would take maybe like an hour for just one dream tending process.
Over one dream or one image?
One, you could do either way. You could one dream maybe, but you could spend an hour with just one image. The images are alive. We want to keep then we want to use active imagination and understand these images are our psyche speaking to us.
So we have dream tending, we have dream work and the embodiment piece. Mm-hmm. And then what other schools?
Well, the Jungian process I still think is very popular in our society and culture. And that's understanding dreams as the dreamer really being the one who orchestrates the entire experience and then seeing the dream characters reflect back aspects of us. And I think that's a really important concept to get, but I think for the students that I've worked with over the years, that's the most challenging, to understand that when Aunt Margie shows up, and she's been gone maybe for 20 years, you know, why is she showing up? So we would want to go in from a Jungian perspective and say, how would I describe Aunt Margie? You know, maybe she was really intelligent, but maybe impatient. And we'd want to just put some objective, you know, descriptive terms down on paper and then start looking at what's coming up for us at this point in our lives. Why is she showing up? You know, what is her message that her image showing up in dream time is trying to convey to me? What's the personal message there? So it helps on that, to just stay along the Jungian process, to create a dream list of characters. Mm-hmm. Like the people
who visit?
Yeah, people who visit, because you probably have some repetitive, you know, characters that visit. And the people who are currently close to you in your landscape right now, and just get it down on paper how you would describe them to somebody who doesn't know them. So when they show up, you can go to, oh, yeah, that's why he showed up. My brother showed up again because he's representing, reflecting, mirroring back some traits to me. Now, it could be sometimes about the brother. And I need to clarify this because if we have dreams about other people in our life that we're currently in relationship with, we're actively connected with them, we're having contact, the dream could be about the relationship. But more often than not, it's about some aspect of you that that character is representing.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I'm joined today in the studio by my guest, Laura Grace, who is a local figure here on the Central Coast. She leads the Women's Symposium, but she also has spent a good 20-plus years doing work in dreams in different aspects. And so she's here today to talk about how we might be able to start a practice of some sort of incorporating our dream life into our waking life and utilizing some of those messages in effective ways. And we encourage you to join the conversation, 805-781-3875. What is it about dreams that interests you? And I guess what interests me, Laura, is that how could someone just start slowly paying attention and gaining some benefit out of their dream experience if they've never really paid attention before?
Yeah, that's a great question, because sometimes I think there is an interest in understanding our dreams, but they're so confusing that we tend to dismiss them. The first thing we want to do, and this is just, we've heard this many times, but it works, is to keep a dream journal. Mm-hmm. We really need to get those dreams down on paper. Or you can use a recorder in bed at night if you don't want to wake up and write it down.
Even on your phone if
exactly.
It's next to you.
Exactly. I just encourage people, don't sleep with your cell phone on. That's because that'll interrupt your dream. Yeah. But anyway, just want to get those dreams out, because we're going to forget. Upon waking, we've got about 30, 45 seconds to remember the dream, and then it's gone. You might get little bits and pieces later in the day, but for the most part, the dream's gone.
And I think that's a question I always had, because I try to stay focused and get the information, but it goes so quickly. Yeah. So what are we supposed to be trying to capture when we're writing down the dream? Images or the story or?
Anything you can remember. I usually just start writing it down as though I'm in the storyline. This is a storyline that I'm in, I've created. I just write it down from the first person in the present tense, as though I'm still in the dream. That's going to help you stay more connected to the dream. And then you want to go back and maybe circle some of the key things that showed up in the dream, maybe a key character or a dream image like an animal or the landscape. And then you want to go back and look at those things that you circled. And this is just a quick approach to starting to work with them. It's just to write down the feelings you were having as you were having the dream. Because if you look at it just as a story, the story might look very scary, but during the dream, you actually were okay. Mm-hmm. You were at peace, or you were happy. So we need to go back and write the feelings in the margin of what was coming up during that dream. Interesting. And if you can only remember just a snippet, go with it.
So whatever really stays present is probably the image you're supposed to
exactly.
take away with it.
Exactly.
Jeremy, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Well, I was wondering if there had ever been any cases documented or instances of sort of two separate people having a crossover dream. I often have dreams involving other people where it felt like a visit or where I felt like I was visiting.
Oh, great
question. And I was thinking like along the lines of like a psychic connection, if that could exist in the dream state.
So you're talking about someone who's alive or someone who's passed away?
Someone who's alive. Okay. Like, could they possibly be dreaming of me as I'm dreaming of them? And has that ever been documented or noticed or anything?
What do you think?
Yeah,
Laura?
That's a great question, Jeremy. Through the International Association for the Study of Dreams, which is one of the main dream organizations in the United States that I'm active in, they do a lot of research globally. And, yes, there has been research that shows that we are connected and we are all very intuitive, even though we might not be practicing using that intuition. So when you are connected to somebody, and especially if there's something going on, like maybe an estrangement or you haven't seen that person in a long time, if there is that connection that you've cultivated and you've had in the past, it wouldn't be uncommon for you to have a dream that you might want to share with that person or that they're having for you or about you. That's not the norm. But it can definitely happen. And also two people who are in relationship and are very close to each other and whose husband and wife, partners that sleep together, we often will have dreams that really is for and about the other person. So it has to do with the level of connection, not really how often you see somebody or have contact with them.
So, Jeremy, does that answer your question at all?
I think it validated the feelings I've been having very well. So, yes, thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for calling in, Jeremy. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Susanna, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was just wanting to tell you guys about it seemed like a dream that I had, but it may have been something else.
Okay.
But I was actually led by my grandmother who's passed away or my aunt, but it was a dead female relative, and I was taken to meet a man, and as I was waking from the dream, the name Edgar Casey appeared in my vision, and the woman's voice told me to remember Edgar Casey, and I didn't know who that was, so I looked it up on the computer, and it turns out he was the sleeping prophet. He's been passed, you know, dead for a very long time, and apparently he was able to go into a sleep state and see people somehow from what he called a source and diagnose their illnesses and then give them instruction on how to treat their illnesses through this sleep state.
Hmm.
And so
wow.
I found it very fascinating that I was able to meet him in a dream like that.
Yeah, I'm getting chills as you were talking. That's a very powerful dream. And Edgar Casey, as you mentioned, has been known as an incredible expert, psychic prophet in the realm of dreams and was able to communicate with people through dream time and address illnesses and that he's showing up for you. And I'm just curious, you said it was either your grandmother or your aunt that showed up?
Yeah, someone who's passed away, but female and definitely on my mom's side.
Okay.
Yeah. I just couldn't get a clear image of the face, but this was many, many years ago. And it's definitely helped me in my like life decisions to become a botanist and, you know, deal in natural medicine and things like that. But as far as like dreams, oh man, I think they're a very powerful tool. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, they are. And it sounds like you might want to stay in touch with, you know, the Edgar Cayce Institute is just loaded, you know, still brimming with information around dreams and how they can be of use. And that it showed up that way, to me, that's no small thing. But you're right, they are powerful. They're tools to really help us navigate through life. It's also part of the reason why I have the life purpose that I'm pursuing is from my dreams. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you for calling in, Susanna. And if you would like to be part of the conversation, 805-781-3875. We'd love to hear from you and your take and experience with your dream life, or questions you might have about how to work with dreams or what to be looking for. Or if you're a little reticent about dreams, we'd like to talk about it. Because I think, as I mentioned to you earlier, Laura, I have a little anxiety about the dreams because I have very vivid dreams and I remember them fully. And I wake up and sometimes I think, yeah, I don't really want to stay with you. I don't want to be there anymore. And so I kind of let them go. And because I'm also a graduate of Pacifica, so I spent time, you know, in that space paying a lot of attention. But I think I resonate with people who have a little reticence to be in that dream place, because I feel like you can get really caught into the images and the messages and the wondering if it's a prophetic dream so much that it can actually cause you a lot of anxiety. So how do you address that with people?
Well, the first thing I remind people when I'm teaching dream course is that dreams are here, as disturbing as they might feel upon during dream time and upon waking, they're here to help us. And sometimes we need a jolt. That's why we have a nightmare. We need something to, you know, wake us up so we start paying more attention to something in our life that needs to be looked at. So I try to reassure people, because I think especially the disturbing dream images is where the real meat is, the real oomph. So we want to remember that the dreams are there to help us, not to frighten us, not to get us to shut down or turn away, but to really remember that they're showing up in a way that could really help us change our lives in very meaningful ways.
So as an example, you talked about this life journey that you're on was inspired by your dream life. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, this goes back many years ago. I had left the corporate world of being a human resource director, and I knew it was not feeding my soul. So I left and bought a home and was living off my 401k for a year just to do inner work. And during that time, I worked very deeply, daily, with my dreams. And one of the dreams I had, I was asking for guidance on some direction on where to put my gifts and talents next, and how they could be of useful to the greater good. So anyway, I had a dream where I'm in a car and I'm in a parking lot, and I get out of the driver's seat and I notice on my passenger side in my car all these booklets, and they have actually fallen out of the passenger seat onto the parking lot ground, and they were spiritual booklets of a path that I was starting to tap into at the time. And then the dream progressed where I'm back home and I'm in my bedroom, and there's this huge multifaceted diamond underneath my bed, and it was enormous. And I pulled that out, and I worked with this dream for several weeks and got an understanding that if I would do the inner work that it took for me to be of help to other people and take it in a more psychological, spiritual path, that there, and keep it intimate, keep it real, keep it authentic, that's where the bedroom was showing up, that I would actually really fulfill a very important part of my soul's purpose this lifetime. And that's exactly what happened.
So in ways, it's almost being able to have images of your gut instinct, mm-hmm. or getting images of your intuition and learning to follow them and pay attention
to
them.
Yes, yes.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Laura Grace. The number to be part of the conversation is 781-3875, 805-781-3875. Jim, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have a 9-year-old son who's very interested in his dreams. He seems to have a memorable dream almost every night, and it's been all his life, apparently. So I just wonder, what have you got for 9-year-old boys to, develop their interest and their understanding?
That's a wonderful question, because children have very vivid dreams in general. And they tend to have more nightmares, too, than adults. But that you care enough to want to support your son's passion or understanding of dreams, I think is amazing. It's wonderful, because they are powerful. There is a dream group that meets in San Luis Obispo. And I only bring that up because I noticed it recently in the New Times. So there are groups that do foster people's dream work. And that might be something for you to consider. I know he's only nine, but really at this point, he needs support of other people who are dreamers working with their dreams. So if he could find a group somewhere here in the county and attend, if he's open to it, that would be wonderful. There's also a lot of information online that he might be interested in looking at. And you could Google, I mean, there's just tons of it, but you could get more narrow about his age group and probably find something. Other than that, I would encourage him just to talk about his dreams. Try not to analyze them and ask him what he thinks those dreams mean. Let him start developing his psyche, his unconscious more, that material coming out through dream time, and help him to start writing them down. I think if you bought him a dream journal, that'd be a wonderful way to get him started to working with his dreams.
And Jim, are you a dreamer also? Do you work with your own dreams, or is it just kind of your son's interest?
I have in the past, and it's interesting to me, but I don't actually have memorable dreams very often lately.
Well, and I think, you know, just from therapist and a mom's perspective, if you found a way to document some of these dreams, your son might find them really fascinating when he's 15 or 20 to be able to look back. So even if you made it part of a thing that was a project for the two of you to gather these dreams and to talk about them, and even if he doesn't do anything with them in this moment, I think it'd be a wonderful gift to give him when he's 18 years old to have this book of dreams you talked about while he was growing up. And I think that would be really fascinating to see how these images or themes continue throughout your son's life.
Well, I appreciate that idea. Yeah.
Thanks so much for calling in. Enjoy your day.
You too. Bye.
Louise, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes. Well, I'm fascinated by dreams. I've always been fascinated by them. But about 10 years ago, I started keeping a dream journal, and I write in it every day when I dream something. And I dreamt, it seems like I started noticing a pattern where I dream of somebody specific. I will call them even if I don't know them or contact them, and sure enough, something's going on in their life. For example, I dreamt someone and I called her or emailed her, and she said, oh, I'm pregnant, by the way. Or I called someone else because I dreamt them, and they said, yes, my brother passed away. So it can be either positive or negative. So what kind of dreams are those?
Yeah, what is that?
Well, you're having prophetic dreams. These are very psychic-oriented dreams. Are you naturally intuitive in your waking life?
I think I am. Mm-hmm. You know, I think from my Navajo side, it's something that I'm very intuitive. And the other recurring dream that I have is when I dream coins. It can't be dollar bills, but coins, I always get money in the mail. It comes to me unexpectedly.
Yeah, it's very prophetic. I mean, it's actually quite a responsibility that you're carrying to have that level of intuition and psychic ability come through your dream time. I mean, that's something on some level you must be okay doing, or you've agreed to, because you are like a messenger when your dreams are at that level, and a very important messenger.
Okay, I always wondered what that was. Sometimes it can scare someone if I tell them I dreamt you and this is what I think, and I just don't know how to approach them.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is a really important point. There are people who are prophetic dreamers that have a dream about something very serious that's about to happen, and we don't ever want to just, you know, overwhelm somebody with our dream. We have to go into it being really mindful and conscious of whether or not they're ready to hear the information, the message. So I think if you really just follow your intuition, and it sounds like you're a very sensitive person in general.
That, I am.
Yeah, it sounds like it. But I really admire you for having this gift and using it in such a beautiful way.
Well, and you mentioned that there's someone that teaches about dreams here or analyzes dreams in the area. I would love to join a group.
Well, give
something.
Me a call. I don't know if you're online at all. My website's lauragrace.net.
Lauragrace.net.
And I do individual work as well as work with small private groups that are outside of environments like Cal Poly, and work with people one-on-one to help. And, you know, not usually with children, but I'm thinking about Jim who called in. Yeah, if you would like to work and go deeper into your dreams, we could schedule something.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for taking the time to call in, Louise. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to KCBX, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Laura Grace, and she has spent a good part of 20-plus years working in the field of dreams. She's currently working on her doctoral degree from Pacifica Graduate Institute in the area of depth psychology and somatic studies and embodiment of dreams. How are body experiences dreams, or how we feel dreams within our body, if I'm saying that correctly.
Exactly.
And we're here today talking about the power of dreams and images and how we can harness those nighttime dreams to inspire and to improve the quality of our daytime lives. And we invite your phone calls to the conversation, 805-781-3875. Margaret, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm calling because I'm one of those people that has those vivid dreams, like you mentioned, like the, you know, sort of the MGM epic musical type dreams. And my husband is really kind of a skeptic, and he doesn't like to hear anything about my dreams. But he says they're all, science has proven that this is just random firings of electrons in your brain. There's no connection to your subconscious or anything. And obviously you have a different perspective. And I'm just wondering what is going on in the world of science today? Is there a controversy between people saying this is strictly, it has nothing to do with any consciousness and, you know, psychologists versus, I don't know, brain studiers, or what is going on with that issue there?
Well, what do we do with the skeptics, Laura Grace?
Yeah. Well, neuroscience in the last 10 years has made amazing strides. And the research that I'm involved in, again, bringing up the International Association for the Study of Dreams, has a ton of research globally that they do that, about what's happening during dream time. And showing the effect they're having on our bodies and our physical well-being and on grief work. So I think what happens is when somebody doesn't understand something, that it's human nature to want to dismiss it or minimize it. And the only way you can prove to somebody how powerful dreams are is if they actually attempt to give it a go.
If they spend time working with their own dreams?
Absolutely. I mean, you can read all the research you want and still be skeptical. But I'm sorry, because it sounds like you are a very vivid dreamer, and to not have someone that you can share those dreams with can be quite, I would think, frustrating. Because I know my husband and I, we do a lot of dream work together. It's not uncommon in the morning to start our day that way, over a cup of hot water and lemon. What did you dream? And usually I remember my dreams. He doesn't so much. But it's having that ability to share is just so helpful and empowering.
So for Margaret, maybe your course that you're doing at Cal Poly in your dreams might be something to look into.
Sure.
If you want to gather the group. Because as I said at the top of the show, you know, for people who aren't interested, hearing about someone else's dreams is about the most boring conversation you can ever have. So it can be very lonely to be invested in your dreams, doing the practice of dream work can be very lonely.
Yes.
So I think, Margaret, I hope that you can find a support group or people to discuss it with, because as Laura Grace is saying, you know, the benefits for people who take the time are huge. And I think, and thank you for taking the time to call, Margaret. I think one of the things that we don't talk enough about is there are many paths to the soul, right? There are many ways that we can find that inner message or our greater purpose or get information about where we should be moving in life. And dreams are one of those ways that we tap into that intuitive sense. And so if people want to dismiss dreams, it's dismissive in a short-sighted way, because it really is just another way of getting to that place that all of us want to get to, which is a level of self-actualization or understanding.
Yes, and by the way, I really believe, my experience has been that dreams are coming from the unconscious. So they are uncensored, raw data, organic data coming up from the depths of our psyche. And so, you know, in consciousness during our waking life, we could have an opinion or have a reaction about something, and it's going to be filtered through, you know, the lens of our experience, right? But your dreams are totally raw,
manifested by your own,
and you're getting really top-notch information, data, therapy, all for free. It really, it's just an amazing process. But yeah, it's so pure, the dreams that come through us, because they're not censored during dream time.
805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. Monty, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind? Are you still there? We'll get back to Monty if he grabs the phone. We'll go on to Kelly. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was wondering if you have any information about night terrors, maybe why children get them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Did you say night terrors or nightmares?
Terrors.
Tears.
Night terrors. Night terrors.
Oh, okay.
My oldest nephew gets them.
Okay. Night terrors are very different than a nightmare. Night terrors are something that we have, and often they do happen more for younger people than adults, but not necessarily. But the really distinct thing about a night terror is you can't remember what you dreamt. You wake up, your blood pressure's pounding, your heart rate's racing, but you can't remember what the dream was. So they can be extremely upsetting to have. However, the night terror is a very healing process to have. The body, the psyche, is working through something during dream time that it needs to move through. So there might be something that your nephew's processing, some old trauma, some current trauma, something that he's only able to really move through during nighttime, dream time.
That's interesting.
Does that make
it's
sense?
It's kind of disturbing to think that they are moving through something so deep when they're so young. You know, I mean, I think he had his first at...
Well, you know,
three or four.
Yeah, no, I understand. But I think sometimes, you know, we're all wired differently and we all have different sensitivities. So maybe it's not something really big, maybe to you if you had experienced it. But to him at his age, it is something scary. So he needs to go through it. So really, even though it doesn't feel like it, night terrors can be a blessing.
Well, and I think also the big question is how do we best nurture and comfort our young ones when they are woke, when they wake up with a terrifying dream or a terror, you know, hugging them, reassuring them, hearing
exactly.
the story. I think a lot of parents are nervous to hear what their child's mm-hmm. going to tell them that they dreamt. And so as parents, if we can take a nice deep breath and say, tell me everything you saw, everything you heard, and to normalize that and to continue breathing calmly will really help to settle your child in that moment. And I think that's really
key. Yeah, and to remind him that what he's going through isn't abnormal. It's not unusual. Actually, it's a natural part of his development, and to just reassure him on that level. But yeah, some
and at three, he might not understand the development piece, but you can say it's going to be okay that mom's here and dad's here.
It's okay. Yeah.
Thanks so much for calling in, Claire. And so, Laura Grace, talk a little bit about how we can actually use dreams to navigate through our life. You know, you talk about that it's powerful and we can use it to get direction on our relationships or health or career or spiritual evolution. I really am curious to know, how would someone begin to tackle using their dreams?
Well, what I teach when I'm offering a course is to ask something specific before you fall asleep and stay with one specific question for a period of time. So say you want guidance on how to handle a sticky situation, or you're looking for guidance on what to do next within your career, I would pose that question. You want an open-ended question, because your dreams aren't going to give you a black and white yes and no type answer. It doesn't work that way. So before you go to sleep, I would hold that question in my mind if I were doing this, and I do a lot of this, by the way, and ask for guidance and just show me what image do I need to see, or what experience do I need to have during dream time to show me what I could do next. And then you need to write the dream down and keep doing this, and you'll see a theme begin to emerge. You'll start seeing the direction because there's a pattern. And you'll be also following what you're feeling. So I can't speak highly enough about the emotions during dream time. The feelings that you're having have a lot to do with the guidance that you're receiving. There's a direct correlation.
So you had talked about, you know, you might have a terrifying dream, but you may not be feeling terrified in the dream. So what would that be telling you then?
Well, if the dream, you mean the dream image looks terrifying,
right, you said
but you're not afraid of it?
Right, while you're in the dream, you're not feeling uncomfortable or terrified. Yeah. It just is a scary situation, but you're not having the feelings of fear.
Yeah, and the feelings are going to override, from my experience, the actual image. Your reaction to that image has a lot to do with what's coming up. The image is very, very important, but it's a very scary image, say a rabid dog chasing you, mm-hmm. and you're really not afraid, then it shows you're confronting something in waking life. You're facing something in waking life that you're no longer running away from, where you may have from this situation in previous times.
Claire, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi. People often talk about their dreams as, you know, bits and pieces of this and this image and that image. My dreams are like watching film. Mm-hmm. When I try to tell people what it was, it doesn't always make sense to translate it into real life language, but it has a plot, it has a start, it has a middle, it has an end. Is that usual?
Yeah, actually it is, clear. Our dreams are very much like a film. It's the movie that we have scripted. It's the movie that we're acting out. And so I often help people to understand their dreams by looking at it as though they're watching a film. as you're in the audience and you're just seeing what's playing out and what's the storyline and where's the landscape taking place and who are the characters in the film. And, you know, what is the theme and how, and actually, and how does it end? Because how the film slash dream ends shows you where your energy is turning toward, what direction it's going. So, yes, that's very common that our dreams are a film or a storyline, and we're acting out the different characters on the stage of our life that we are creating.
And so you talk, thank you so much, Claire, for calling in. You talk about being able to ask for guidance or to manifest certain things in your dreams. Is that in some way directing then where your thoughts are going to go? I mean, what would be more powerful, to say, I would like to know about this, or to just dream and see what comes up, or while you're sleeping, see what comes up? Because it seems like once you put an intention out there that you're kind of already focusing what you want the response to be.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we don't want to direct the dreams. And that's why I'm real hesitant on lucid dreaming and trying to change the course of the dream when you're in it, because a lot of people can do that. But what I'm talking about by asking for guidance, I'm keep it open-ended. Like, here's the situation I'm in with my career, and I'm thinking of making a change, but I'm not sure that this is the right way to go. So I'm just asking to be presented with dream images that might give me some guidance on which direction to go. So we keep it very open-ended, because you're right, exactly right. We don't want to box this, and we don't want to box the dream in. We don't want to box those images in. We want to give them a voice, a place for them to talk to us. So we want to keep any kind of question around what we're looking for very open-ended.
And when you are doing more conscious dreaming or trying to pay attention to the dreams and what you're writing down, how long should you be writing down your dreams before you start to look at it and want to dissect it or come up with a message from it?
Yeah,
I'm getting the feeling that, and it's from my own experience, it's not like I'm dreaming and then someone holds up a sign and says, here is the answer, right? Yeah. That it's somewhere buried within the dream. So how many dreams does it take to get to the center?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't try to dissect a dream ever when you're going through. You're just wanting to get it down on paper or into a recorder so you have it and you can continue playing it back and looking at it. So you might want to sit with that dream throughout the rest of the day and let it bubble up on what's coming up for you. I don't really suggest dissecting, or I know we want to understand our dreams. I understand that need to want to interpret, and I'm very analytical. So it's very tempting for me to want to get in there and analyze it immediately. But we keep in mind that the ego speaks first and loudest. So whenever we're quick to analyze a dream, we are probably not on the right track.
So if we're looking at just the surface message of the dream.
The quicker we are to analyze or interpret a dream, the farther away from the meaning of that dream we're going to find ourselves. So I encourage people to get it down on paper, circle some key components in the dream, write down some of the feelings while you were having the dream, and later on, after you've been, let it marinate, later on go back and start to see what theme is emerging. And it will have something to do with what's happening in your current life. Even if it's a dream about a childhood home that you lived in 40 years ago, dreams are present time oriented.
Okay, so they're usually, because if people are writing down dreams, generally they're not going to have the same dream every night. I mean, sometimes people talk about having repetitive dreams, but generally we tend to have different dreams every night. So are they still connected to some typical message?
They are. In fact, the dreams throughout the night, we have on average 4 to 5 dreams every night, even though we're not remembering them. They're connected and they build, and there is a theme coming through those dreams. But you're right, could have the same house might show up 2 nights, you know, down the road, or same dream character shows up next week. So those are the things that you want to write down and start building your dream language list from. Those recurring pieces, those recurring homes that show up, recurring cars that show up, recurring characters that show up, and start writing down what they mean to you. This is how you build your own personal dream journal that you can't get in any dream dictionary in a store.
And so what about those dream dictionaries that everyone likes to Google the next morning when they wake up? How accurate are they? And why does every dream I have something to do with death, according to the dream dictionary, that every image? You know,
First thing, throughout the dream dictionaries, I'm sorry, but dreams are so personal that what something means to me is going to be very different than what it means to you. And those dream meanings evolve over time as we're growing and changing. So no dictionary can really tell you what any image or any character means to you. It's really impossible.
So for someone who might not have, again, I keep going back to, and I'm assuming that everyone's more like me, that we don't have the discipline of dream journaling or noticing our dreams, but there'll be times in our life where something just keeps demanding our attention, or and maybe it's something that, you know, when should you be concerned? You know, for people who tend to go on the anxious side, that they only notice in their dream or remember the parts of their dream that were frightening, right? And they might not be remembering or writing down the parts that were the positive message. Because I'm always seeing it from a therapeutic, right, family therapist part. If someone's going to come to me and tell me about their dream or what keeps coming up, I'm always wondering, you know, what parts of the dream are they not remembering? Do we tend to have selective memory about the images, or is that also part of the message?
I think whatever we remember is what we need to hone in on. We might not be remembering a good portion of that dream, but whatever we do retain is worth looking at. And if it's scary or frightening, again, I just want to keep reminding people, they're there to help you. So it might be frightening to you because of how you're interpreting it, but if you, like that snake dream I brought up with the, you know, the biting me on the top of my left hand was terrifying. It made myself wake up. I wouldn't go back to sleep for 2 hours. I was so afraid to go back into that dream. But over time, I've learned that that snake dream was actually very, very powerful and very, very positive for me. But I'm programmed to think about snakes in a certain way that was stopping my ability to really see clearly what it was showing up for.
I wonder also for people who don't kind of live as much in the world of symbolism, if their dreams are different or if they notice different things. You know, I that's what I find fascinating, is that I think wherever our training lies, you know, for my engineering husband, I think the things that he notices in his dreams are much different than me with a background in mythology or that kind of work. So I think that our personal temperament has a lot to do with how we pull things from dream work.
Yeah.
Do you think dream work is accessible to all people, or do you think you have to have a certain temperament to be someone who actually utilizes dreams or can utilize dreams well?
Well, out of all the hundreds of people I've worked with doing dream work, there's only been one man that had no dream recall ever, even taking my client, which is very unusual. I think everyone has the ability to use their dreams in a helpful way. I think the recall changes, and some of us have a leaning toward being more prolific in their dream recall. I think you're right, though. Depending on where we're at intellectually and emotionally and psychologically, dreams are going to show up differently. And so you're right. If you're married to someone who's an engineer, his dreams might seem more concrete. But all dreams are metaphor. Mm-hmm. Whether you're an engineer or you're an attorney or you're a therapist or dream counselor, we're always dealing with metaphor. And so that doesn't change. And
so even a literal dream is a metaphor for something
very
else.
Very few literal dreams. And if there was a literal dream, it would be more around the body, like maybe a physical condition around the body. So I always tell people, if you have a dream about the body, check in and make sure and just rule out any physical issues. But usually they're going to be, it's a metaphor for mm-hmm. something else. And that's why if you're not into the realm of symbolism, like you mentioned, it may be harder at first to understand your own dreams. But with time, they become very familiar to you. It doesn't take long once you get in the groove to step into them.
And for those who might not tap into their nighttime dreams, can you talk a little bit about this idea of waking dreams and how that works?
Yeah, I have taught many courses on waking dreams because we look at a waking dream as though it's a nighttime dream.
And so talk, what is that definition?
So say this would be a good way, and you're asking how do you really get into dreams if you're not used to them or they're anxiety ridden. You mm-hmm. could start with waking dreams. So you could go about your day to day. And, you know, like going to work and then you're at work or you're around a group of people and notice what comes up for you and what stands out during the day. And you could go home and in a journal tonight, write down that experience just as though you had dreamt it. And you would look at it as just though you had dreamt it. So the character that popped out to you today was maybe your boss or something that showed up with someone that you saw, maybe a homeless person in San Luis that, you know, grabbed your caught your attention. We would look at that just as though we would when we're sleeping.
So the images of things or things we come across throughout our day during our waking time, we can also draw from that.
And that activates the psyche to actually help the person start getting more dream recall and deepening the understanding of their nighttime dreams. So you could start with just looking at your waking life, like what happened today and what came up today and what am I feeling and what am I noticing about certain thoughts that are emerging, and write that down as though it's a dream. And that's a very good way to start getting into the landscape of dreams.
So I've been talking today with Laura Grace. She's a lecturer, author, teacher, and director of the Circle of Grace and producer of the Central Coast Women's Symposium. Laura Grace has an extensive background teaching over 150 programs on both waking and nighttime dreams. She's published over 200 articles on dreams and has lectured on dreams throughout the United States. She will be offering a class through the Cal Poly Extended Education called In Your Dreams that's going to be running beginning May 14th on four Thursdays. And people can find out more information, I imagine, by going to calpoly.edu under Extended, www.extended. And if people would like to talk to you personally, Laura Grace, how might that happen?
They should send me an email at laura@lauragrace.net.
And is it at lauragrace.net?
Yeah, laura@lauragrace.net.
Okay, so laura@lauragrace.net. And what kind of things can people come and talk to you about? What kind of dream work do you tend to do with people individually?
Well, when we're doing an individual type dream process, we would take it more into a more embodied process. So I would actually want to help them connect with their dreams and get in touch with their body and what they're experiencing at that level. But they don't have to be somatically inclined. We can start out from a more Jungian approach of understanding the dream characters, the issues that are happening in their waking life and what's emerging during dream time, because again, they tell it, they're so rich. They're just a treasure trove of information.
And it's unfortunate that so often in our culture, we're doing more to try to numb people from the experience of being alive instead of awakening them to all the ways that they're fully alive. And I think that dreams are one of those powerful ways that we can touch into our most alive state. Yeah. Right? When we're uncensored in our sleep at night, it's one of the only times now that we're just purely awake to our own experience. During the days, we're behind screens or looking at screens or busy with work. And so that really filters our ability to feel naturally who we are, right? Didn't come in touch with that gut feeling or that image. And so I really appreciate you taking the time to come in today and talk about your dream work. And I encourage anyone who is wanting to step into the world of dreams to start off slowly by just allowing yourself to remember images and remember those dreams and jot them down. Keep a little notepad next to the bed. And you know, for couples that are always searching for things to talk about, it might be a fun place to start your day. You know, you might take a little time to share this is what I was thinking while I slept last night, honey. And I wonder what that meant. And we always appreciate your participation in the program. If you'd like to learn more about us, you can find us on Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, or you can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Next week, I will be joined in the studio by my guest, Anna Marie Fiddle-Rice, talking about grief and transition. And I look forward to having Laura Grace back on very soon to talk more about dream and dream work and the embodiment of dreams. And thank you for supporting Public Radio, KCBX.
Thank you.